It's the TEH Podcast, episode number 223, with Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. This week, Apple Intelligence, new OS features, a smarter Siri, and of course, privacy.
So we have a lot to talk about this week, and it all revolves around two letters, AI.
Which stands for?
Well, I was going to say that Apple did the most Apple thing possible.
Yeah.
They reappropriated those letters.
Yep. Yeah, that was they didn't kind of hide it. You know, they smirked at the whole thing. You know, it's cute. It's nobody's going to care. Nobody's actually going to call it Apple Intelligence after this year. You know, just the journalists and the Apple fans are going to be like, oh, this is Apple Intelligence. And it's just AI and it's the same thing, but they're having fun with it. It's as expected. They have a lot of new AI features in their new operating system stuff, which was announced at the Worldwide Developers Conference on Monday morning. But there's also a lot of new, like, regular stuff, like, in the operating systems besides AI. So, there's plenty to talk about. And it was a true developer conference announcement. No new hardware, no products, nothing like that. It was like, here are the new operating systems. Here's what's going to be in. Here are the APIs and developer kits and things like that that the developers will get to use pretty soon. So, but it did revolve a lot around AI. And I know that's what mostly, you know, people would want to hear about. So
it is interesting that all the press has been about AI. And looking at the list you've got in our shared notes, there's a bunch of stuff that I didn't know that. So yeah, let's do the features first, and then we'll talk some more about AI.
So AI features. So I've been thinking a lot about this. There's not much for me to do now with the features because Apple's got the first beta out of everything. These betas do not feature any of the AI stuff. Like, really none of it is there.
Right.
So the betas are out, and it's probably good because it gives developers and like the power users the chance to test out the non-AI features and not ignore them over the shinier AI stuff.
Yeah, you know that if Apple dumped AI on this crowd, that's all they would play with.
Yeah. So, and a lot of the features are really, they're kind of like request fulfillment. Like, they are things like, for instance, you can now, in the Messages app, send later. You know, you can schedule a message to go out, which, you know, for years people have been dying for. There's window management on the Mac. So you can, you know, say, oh, I want to move this window to the top right corner. I want to tile these four windows, that kind of thing.
You mean like Windows?
Yeah, exactly. So stuff that it's like they're just checking off, all right, what are the most, like the 10 most requested things people want? And they're putting a lot of stuff like that in there, which is good that they're not really their calculator app for the iPad. That's a big one that people have been requesting. It's the most ridiculous request that over the last 10 years, because there are free calculator apps for the iPad. There are even better ones that are paid that are a couple dollars. So to, you know, have this idea that there's been people like haven't been able to use their iPads properly for 10 years because they don't have a calculator app. It's like, all right, spend $1,000 on an iPad Pro, but you don't go and get a calculator app. Sure. You know, I'm sure it was really important to you then. But they actually went really in a nice direction with the calculator app because they integrated it with Notes. And in doing so, you can actually be in a note and you could type something like 1 + 2. And then put an equal sign, and it will suggest 3 afterwards. Or you could even set it to just put the 3 right there. So you can actually do calculations by typing in Notes, which is an interesting way to do calculations. But you could even do variables. So you could say A equals 7, B equals 8, and then say A plus B equals, and it will put 15. And then if you change the lines above or anywhere else in the note to make A something else, it changes the results of the formula.
It's like a freeform spreadsheet. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a neat thing. And then even on the iPad version, you could do it with the Apple Pencil and you could handwrite all of it.
Right.
So you could handwrite all that stuff. You could even put a complex mathematical formula and handwrite all this, and it will come out with the answer, even figuring out variables. So you could do like algebra by writing stuff out, and it'll figure out the variable that, you know, is in the equation. You could write a list of numbers and put a line under it, and it puts the sum. So just, you know, they basically said, all right, we'll update all the calculator stuff, and we're going to go some steps further and then make it universal across all the platforms. So a lot of that kind of catch up to things. And but there is one feature for the Mac that I think is a killer feature. And right away, I called that it would be something people don't talk about much. But once it came out, people still wouldn't talk about it very much. They would just use it a lot.
Right.
But I was a little wrong, because a lot of other people agree with me and have been talking about it as like, this is going to be my new favorite feature. And that's the ability to have your iPhone on your screen. So imagine you're sitting at a desk like lots of people do. And, you know, one of the first things you do, if you're like me and millions of other people, is you sit at your desk, you take your iPhone out, and you put it down on the desk next to your keyboard. And then there are things you do on your computer, on your Mac. And then there's things you do on your phone, right? You pick your phone up and maybe you text with that. Maybe you get an alert on an app. Maybe there's, you know, some wellness thing you do. Maybe there's a social media thing you do. And it's on your phone sitting there next to your keyboard. But while mainly you're working with your Mac. Well, you don't have to do that anymore. You can leave your phone in your pocket or put it on the charger, and your phone appears on your Mac screen. Just the regular display as a window. And you can interact with it using your mouse and trackpad and the keyboard. So all the stuff that you would do in an app on the phone, you could just do through your Mac and see the results, including audio, including notifications.
It's interesting because this seems like a solution for the frustration of having to type in long, gnarly passwords.
Well, exactly. Or for typing anything. I mean, right. You don't have to, if you use, say, okay, maybe messages, you can use on either one, but you're on your Mac, you don't need to use like the messages app, maybe not the messages app, maybe use WhatsApp or Telegram or one of the other ones, right? It still could be on your phone and it just appears on the screen. And, you know, well, it is on the screen, and then you could just see the notification. You can go over there and you could type, and you could drag and drop between them too. So if you are working on your Mac on an image, and say you're using like Photoshop on your Mac, and you produce an image, you could take that image and drag and drop it into Instagram on your iPhone. So, nice. You know, it's really nice. And just knowing that I know a lot of people work with their iPhone as their second screen on their desk, now not having to switch to a fully switch between two devices. It just becomes integrated. It's like this virtual iPhone on your screen. I think it's going to be a big deal for just like normal everyday use. So anyway, that's my take on like that and all those normal features. But enough about wasting our time with normal features. Let's talk about AI. So Apple introduced, Apple Intelligence, and basically they said, look, it's going to work iPhone, iPad, Mac. Like, we're going to develop all these features for those three operating systems. You know, for now, I'm sure stuff is going to leak onto the Apple Watch and the HomePod and Apple TV later on. But right now they're concentrating on the core stuff, and it's going to be across those three platforms. It's primarily going to be an upgrade to Siri. So it's not going to replace Siri. It's not going to be something alongside Siri. It's kind of going to be integrated with Siri, but it's also going to be just available in apps. There's going to be various things you can do with it. And some of those things can be done on device using those neural cores that are on the chips, just like I've said many times before on this very podcast. Apple's got that advantage. And they're going to put a large language model in the operating system on your device. So certain things can be done without it ever leaving your device. And they're touting this as a privacy thing, but also, of course, it's a great speed thing and a convenience when you're not connected to the internet, too. Then they're going to have this other tier where it does call out to the servers. But the first level of that is going to be Apple stuff. And they even said they're developing their own servers using their own silicon chips to power those AI servers. So that was really interesting.
Especially in light of the OpenAI stuff that's supposedly happening then too.
Right. Because that's the third tier. The third tier is, okay, we'll also allow you to add various other AI services and call out to them. And OpenAI is the one they have. But they were very specific, saying that they could add others in the future. So you can imagine having like a variety of like two or three or four, and OpenAI's there, and maybe Google Gemini, and, you know, whatever else is there.
Yep.
So, you know, but that's like the third tier. And that makes sense in a way. Like, I, you know, the way I explain it is, you know, you can have a large language model figure out what you mean when you say you want to create like a calendar event. That's something that could be done with a relatively smaller large language model. But if you want to ask it some obscure question about like European history, that means the large language model needs to know all of world history like in as much depth as possible. In that case, you can't expect it all be sitting on your iPhone.
Right.
So being able to call out to, you know, a ChatGPT, which has all of that on their servers, then kind of makes sense. Apple really touted their privacy on all of this, talking about, you know, obviously when it's done on your device, it's your device using the information on your device that's yours, and nobody else has it. When it goes to Apple servers, it's also encrypted and private. And even when it goes to ChatGPT, they're not going to let ChatGPT know anything about you. So it's kept private. It's interesting that you don't need a ChatGPT account and you don't need to pay anything for it. So
it's interesting because that actually does set aside some of ChatGPT's features. I mean, ChatGPT, the way you use it normally, it remembers you, right? And it can pull from prior conversations, which of course is in a fully anonymous environment, it won't be able to do.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, like, is there some sort of encapsulation with a short conversation? Like, can you ask one question about something and then ask for a follow-up?
Right.
We'll have to see when it's available. Now, as far as what it can do, Apple is doing some interesting things there instead of just because, you see, like, ChatGPT and Google Gemini have this thing where it's just like you provide it with content and it gives content back. Like the simplest form is you give it text, a question, and it gives you text back, an answer. Right. It gets more complex because you can ask for, give it text and it can give you an image back. You can give it an image and it might give you another image or might give you text back from that image, right? So there, but you're basically giving it content and it's giving it stuff back. What those things don't do is actually do things.
Right.
Like ChatGPT currently can't do something on your Mac. You can't tell it to, you know, open a file, for instance.
Right.
It might be able to tell you what the file could be called or something, but it won't know. It can't actually perform actions, right? It's just like somebody standing over your shoulder. Somebody you're talking to on the telephone is basically a good analogy, right? They can't do anything. All they can do is tell you what to do. So
it's interesting because I think that Microsoft's Copilot is slowly heading in this direction as well.
There are
a limited number of things that it can actually, quote unquote, do on your PC.
Right. And Copilot is of course Microsoft's thing, right? It's their chance to let the AI do something instead of just telling you something. And so what are they letting it basically do for you? So some of the features that they showed off were some writing tools. So proofreading and rewriting. So the idea is you can select some text, say in a word processor or in mail or something like that, and you could have it proofread it for you, and you could have it rewrite something for you. And it even will give you options and will give you, like, you could say, make this more professional, make this more casual, make this fun, make this a poem, you know, whatever it is. So it's basically putting, it's taking the AI, and instead of just saying, here's a prompt, what do you want? It's giving you, like, oh, you could proofread the thing you just wrote, and I'll tell you what's wrong with it. Or you can take the thing you just wrote and make it more professional. Like, there's a button for that, you know? So it's going to be making it easier for people to use instead of just this wide open field. Do whatever you want with a piece of text that you, you know, you wrote. You could do article summaries, and they're doing an interesting thing with that. That's going to allow you, they're attaching it to the reader view in Safari. And in addition to just having the article there, they'll provide a summary of the article and also a table of contents. The table of contents will be generated from it, you know, looking at the article. So it's not like you, somebody could just have an article that's, you know, 50 paragraphs and there are no headings. And the AI is actually going to make a table of contents for that.
It's interesting because a number of these
and jump.
A number of these things are, I mean, I don't want to downplay the fact that it's all being integrated into a wonderful system, but a number of these things are actually being done elsewhere already, right?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah.
Readwise Reader comes to mind for the automatic summary and table of contents generation and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's interesting. But again, it's the kind of thing where you might ask ChatGPT to summarize an article for you and then maybe ask it to provide you with an outline of that article, which is what the table of contents is.
Right.
And instead of Apple just saying, here's some tools, up to you to figure out what to do with them, Apple's saying, here are a table of contents. Click on any of these things and it could jump to.
Yep.
It could summarize email, not just emails, but email threads. So the idea being that, you know, there's an long email thread, or maybe you get a response from somebody and it's like the fifth time you've gone back and forth. It can link all those together.
It's funny.
Tell you what's going on.
I did that the other day with ChatGPT, not expecting much. Yeah. I had this bizarre, I mean, it was, you know, if you take a look at the email thread, it's all replies and, you know, it's like 60% email headers with a little bit of content strewn about. And I was actually fairly impressed at its ability to actually summarize exactly the entire thread was about. So I assume as much, if not better, from Apple.
Yep. There was a lot of talk about it helping you prioritize things. So the idea is you get a bunch of notifications, and instead of just being like, well, here's your most recent notification at the top, it can now put them in the order of like, here's the important one, and the other ones below are not as important, which is a great task for AI to do, especially notifications, because sometimes you just end up with like 20 notifications and 18 of them are really not that important at all. You could just dismiss them. And two are things you actually need to do something with. So if AI can bring those to the top, that's great. They even showed off a focus mode. You know, the Macs and iPhones and iPads have these focus modes, and you could say things like, only show me notifications from these apps or from these people. There's going to be basically an AI focus mode where you're letting it figure out what's important. So you'll get notifications and the AI will say, oh, I'm going to show you this one. And nope, I'm going to keep this one nice and quiet in the list. And that's really useful. Let's see. Because, you know, for me, it's like, yeah, I would definitely use that to help me with my notifications. And then, of course, you can also just ask the AI question. You can ask Siri questions. And the idea being that hopefully instead of just getting here's a web page that will, you know, show you this, you actually get an answer. And then that's where it'll also prompt you for, we can ask ChatGPT this. And then you get to say, ask ChatGPT that. So I guess sometimes we'll have to see. Sometimes it may not know if you ask it a question, it may not know the answer, or sometimes Apple's AI may be able to give you a simple answer, and ChatGPT might be able to go on and on and on for pages, you know, talking about what you want. But that's where you can kind of jump off to those things. There's also Apple's doing something really interesting with image generation. So they're also kind of making it, here's a set of tools you can use instead of, here's just wide open, here's a blank prompt, go for it, what do you want? The first thing they're doing is letting you make your own little emoji. Now, I hate the fact they're using the term emoji, because that means I'm going to have to explain over and over again how emoji are part of a character set that's, you know, a standards board overseas,
right. Right.
and is deployed as just like a font. These are not emoji. These are small images that look like emoji.
Right.
But the idea is you can say, birthday, candles, cat, and it creates an emoji that fits those three things. And, you know, or you could even take a name a friend. So I could say Leo, birthday, and it may generate an emoji that looks like you because it looks in my Photos app.
That's scary.
And says, oh, there's one Leo here in, you know, in the faces recognition.
Right.
And let's put a birthday hat on him, have him blowing out candles. And there's an emoji character. So that's kind of a neat little thing. But they're always going to look like the Apple emoji. Then there's also this image playground thing that they've created where you could generate full images, but Apple's kind of making them look like certain styles. So Apple's not going to get into the market of like making, you can make fake images of things or, create these realistic photos and do stuff like, you know, the artists do with Dolly or, you know, Midjourney or any of that stuff. It's basically for like, you're doing a presentation and you're on a slide and you need a picture to illustrate something. You can then use this image playground to then say, I need an image that is a person with a shopping cart and it's full, you know, and it will generate it in one of several styles that are very specific. So, you know, and these are going to cut. So you can kind of pick this one style and then you get this cartoony, not cartoony, but almost like a very graphic looking style of this image. And then you can, of course, modify it a little bit and say, maybe make the shopping cart full of bottles. Make it be a, you know, smaller shopping cart, whatever. You could change things a little bit, but it's going to stick with a certain style so that it really can't be used for too many nefarious purposes, right?
Photorealistic is not a style.
Yeah, it's not a photorealistic thing. And you can know it's got training wheels on, in other words. It's like you're not going to, but it's going to be great for this presentation, right?
Sure.
You go through your slides instead of like, I've got 10 slides, I need 10 images. Now I have to go out and find them. I need a clip art collection. I have to edit some of them. It's going to be a pain. You could just go through and just type these little things to the image generator. It's like, boom, here are 10 images that I could use. And you could do the same thing in other places. Like, you know, if you want to send a message to somebody and illustrate something in a note, you're doing like, you know, notes for a class and you want to, have an illustration that shows your point. You'll be able to do this stuff in this image generator. So it's going to be this, you know, where companies like Adobe or Midjourney or, you know, whatever, they have to go and say, we need to provide a tool that's everything to everybody, right? If there's a limitation to our tool, we need to bust through the limitation because that's what the professionals using our tools expect. They want, right, to be able to do anything. Apple can go and say, no, we're just going to create a tool that's going to make nice images for presentations and notes. And that's it. If you want something more, go to one of the pro tools.
Right.
This is a tool that just comes with our operating systems. So there's that. What else? Oh, a big thing is that you will be able to ask for tech help. So basically, it's going to put me out of business.
I was going to say.
Yeah. It's so you can ask, the AI for like, how do I turn Bluetooth on or something on my Mac or whatever. And it will show you the steps to do it. So that's really pretty cool. Hopefully I could teach people how to do that. And maybe I can still do my fun tutorial videos, but not have to handle as many questions. That's a cool thing. What else? Oh, and then like a big thing is like, and this is where it really differentiates between all the other AI, is asking Siri to actually do something. So
right,
like open a file, but not, you know, the file name, but open that spreadsheet file I was working on last week that had a pie chart in it. You know, show me the images of my friend, that time, I forget when it was, but we were, you know, we were camping, you know, and taking really vague things like that and actually doing things with it. Apple's got this thing. They already had this system with Siri before called Intents, where, you know, you can have, here's the text, and then the text is interpreted, and can it fit an intent? Like the intent may be to create an event in the calendar app. So it looks like they're supercharging that and wiring that up to their AI so that you can ask it to do something, and it could try not to figure out what to respond as text, but to figure out what your intent is, and then actually do the thing. And that's an API, so they make that available to third parties as well. So somebody has an app, they can go and list, like, here are all these intents that you could do with this app. So if somebody actually says they want to do something, and the AI interprets it as, I bet you they want to use this third-party app to accomplish this task, it could actually find that in a list of intents and do it. And that's where it's, you know, really exciting. And that's, of course, where I believe, you know, Microsoft is going with Copilot too. So it's really, it's Copilot versus Apple Intelligence in that field. The other AI companies really don't have much to say on that because they don't have operating systems. I mean, I guess there's Google with Android and I guess, you know, Chromium or whatever, but you know, OpenAI itself and other AI things out there, there are, you know, we're separating the, you know, the AI from the actual tools that actually perform tasks. So anyway, that's the exciting part. And the last thing I wanted to mention on my list was just using AI to do something Siri has been frustratingly bad at for, you know, 13 years since it's been introduced, is understanding what you want.
Right.
You know, if you ask Siri to do something with the proper words, and Siri will do that, it will do it. If you change those words around, it gets confused.
Yeah.
Same thing with Alexa and same thing with, you know, Google Assistant.
I was just going to say that, you know, everything you're describing for Siri sounds like what I was mentioning on previous episodes I want out of Alexa.
Yes.
It's I want, you know, that kind of more conversational understanding what I mean, not what I say, if you get that right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the old computer, joke. Computers do exactly what you tell them, regardless of what you intended. And that's hard. And I want my AI companions to do that.
Yep. And I think this may be like the best part of this whole thing is that I feel that Siri, you know, it's been referred to recently as, you know, Apple's previous AI efforts as Siri. And it's like, I don't really feel Siri was ever an AI effort. Siri was a voice assistant.
Right.
Right. It was just trying to take what you were saying and strictly interpret that in a very finite set of actions. So instead of clicking here and clicking there, you would say this. And it's not really anything like the large language model AI that we're talking about here. But it was frustrating that Apple just didn't keep improving it. Like if people asked for the weather 15 different ways that Siri understood, why weren't they looking and saying, well, outside of those 15 ways, what was the next most common way that people asked for the weather that Siri didn't understand? Let's add that today. Right. And tomorrow, let's add the next one. And
well,
you know,
training. Yeah, they've got the training data because you've got people asking the question again and again and again until they get something that Siri understands. And therefore, it should then be able to reverse engineer those previous mistakes.
Right. And Apple never did that. Apple never kept up with what people were asking. And maybe they feared getting to a point where there would be thousands and thousands of these things they would need to maintain. And every time they change something, they'll be like, okay, we have 4,000 different things that Siri can do. Did we break any of those 4,000? So they kept it at like, Siri could do 200 things. And now when we change something, we can test those 200. Maybe that was the issue, but it was frustrating not only to have Siri not be able to do things like open an app, but only if you say it in one of three different ways. Like it should be 100 different ways you can say to open an app, but even things, it would lose things. Like there was a time when Siri could open a file for you and that just went away at some point, some update. It just suddenly said, I don't know how to do that. I'm like, you did last week, you know? And now hopefully we're at the end of that. And hopefully now it's a whole new team that is kind of, or it's a whole new charge for the team maybe, that's like, no, this is new. Now we don't hold back anymore. Now Siri constantly gets better and better at understanding things using a large language model rather than our old kind of voice assistant interpretation code that we had. And instead of it, because I've noticed with ChatGPT, it gets better and better at understanding. I mean, you know, in December of 2022 or whatever, there were a lot of, you know, there are a lot of things it just didn't get that now it gets right away. The model has gotten better. And I'm hoping that the same happens with Siri, even if when it launches this summer with this new way of doing things, it would be it would still be early. And we could expect that it would change. And just because Siri couldn't do something one day doesn't mean that in a couple of months it won't be able to. You know, hopefully the model will constantly be updated. So we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so there's one, it's a super geeky feature that surprised me, honestly, that got announced, and it's, you know, geeky enough to fly well under the radar. And that's the support of RCS as a messaging standard.
Good point. Yes.
Apple's been resisting that for some time. Whether or not they've actively been resisting it or simply ignoring it is unclear, but apparently they're going to have the messaging app become RCS compatible, which for those that don't know, RCS is basically the new version of SMS. It's you know, more secure, more functional, yada, yada. I think it actually bypasses the entire SMS infrastructure, which has a bunch of problems. But I just find that interesting because what that means is it's an interoperability thing where RCS is a standard that applies to basically all the phones, Androids and whatever else. So, you know, you and I will be able to chat across devices using RCS if that's the thing to do. So that one kind of caught me by surprise.
Yeah, and I think that's partially due to some of the regulatory issues, especially in Europe, right? You know, the iMessage has been, they've been hitting up in both the US and Europe, you know, iMessage has some sort of monopoly, which is kind of crazy considering it has a minority of the right. Messaging traffic, right? So I don't know, but the idea, and then of course, the messages app support SMS, but the idea is that they're these green, they're green bubbles for SMS and blue bubbles for iMessage, which makes sense. It's two different systems.
I want my blue bubbles.
Different cover, but there have even been people that have. I mean, there was testimony of like kids traumatized by having, because their bubbles were green and instead of blue. And it's like, that's a whole other subject. But, you know, it's be interesting to see if RCS is green or if RCS is some other color. It would be really funny if it was just a third color that was RCS. I think that would be the best thing for Apple to do in terms of saying, see, the only reason we did colors is so you could distinguish the protocol.
And RCS should come in as gray because they don't want it to feel exciting.
Yeah, maybe. But if they make it green, then it's clear that it's like, oh, no, blue is good and green is bad, right? Or maybe what I suspect Apple may do is make everything blue at some point. Just say, okay, well, if people are that upset about it, what we will do is change it so that everything's blue, and then you got to figure out what works and what doesn't, or, you know, what's compatible. Because they have a bunch of new messaging features too, and old messaging features that only work because Apple owns the system, right? They could say, hey, there's some fun things in the messages app that you could do. You could send all these special effects and all this stuff. Even some of those emoji that we're talking about, all because we own the messaging system. Right. But you can't send that stuff over SMS, or you can only send it in a certain way because we don't own that. We can't force the world to upgrade SMS just because we had a cool idea for how text should vibrate or something. So anyway, you sent me two articles.
I did.
And they were interesting.
They were interesting. I think that they show in some ways kind of sort of the state of tech reporting and media, but the first one that got my attention is titled "The iPhone is now an AI Trojan Horse" over in the Atlantic.
Yeah.
And for the record, I've got links to these that will be in the show notes. They are gift links, at least for a certain amount of time. So, you know,
you know what I found as an aside here?
Yes.
I found it interesting how these two publications handled gift links differently.
Yes.
The Atlantic was like, welcome, read this article. This is a gift. Hey, if you're interested, here's more about our publication.
Okay.
The Washington Post said, hey, this is a gift link. If you want to read it, what's your email address?
Oh, really? So you still have to sign up?
Yeah. So fortunately, I have Apple News Plus, or maybe it's the way Washington Post puts things on Apple News. I was able to read the article over there.
Interesting. Fascinating.
But I was not able to read it on the web without giving them my email address.
Interesting.
Which, yeah, that was kind of interesting. Anyway.
Anyway, the point of the Atlantic article was simply that essentially, you know, with Apple going all in on AI, simply making it part of the device. Well, I'm sure that some pieces of it are going to be optional. A large portion of it will not be. It's just the way the devices work these days. And it's like, okay, this is how apparently you make AI mainstream, whether people like it or not, right? Whether they want it or not. AI is still in that point where there's a lot of people that are very concerned about it, very, very upset that it's showing up in places that they don't want it to show up. Having talked a lot about Google search lately, I know that there are a lot of people that seriously dislike the AI summaries and responses that Google is throwing in the search results. But I just found it interesting that the topic here was, okay, yep, this is part of what Apple's doing. Whether it's intentional or not is unclear, but the net result is AI is going mainstream.
Yeah. Yeah, the Atlantic article is much more positive and talked about, you know, Apple's the gate as this gatekeeper. I love thinking of metaphors. And like one of the metaphors I came up with is the idea of like a car for automobiles. I'm always thinking of automobiles when it comes to metaphors for new technology.
Sure. Yep.
And when cars, when new technology developed for driving, things like during our lifetime, like power steering, power brakes, fuel injection, you know, stuff like that. Typically the stuff comes out, oh, there's this new technology. You don't get it. Most people don't get it until manufacturers start putting it in their cars, you know, and then it becomes this thing that's like, oh, you can get cars now with like fuel injection, right? If you want a car like that. And eventually every car has it. You know, power windows. Oh, well, if you really want, you know, if you're like, you want a special luxury car, you can get a car with power windows.
I remember
when that
days,
was like a special
yeah.
thing. And then basically one day it was just, no, there are no cars without power windows, right? It's kind of like that with companies like, you know, ChatGPT and stuff. They come out with this technology. And the thing is, the technology by itself is nothing, right? If you don't have a computing device, ChatGPT is nothing for you.
Right.
It's not something you just use by itself. There is no chat. You can't go to the grocery store and buy some ChatGPT, put it in your cart and take it home. It's something that goes into your device. So until the manufacturers, the people that actually make operating systems in this case, start actually putting it in it, or maybe software makers like Adobe start putting it in the apps that you buy, it's not going to be something that's, you know,
but it's interesting because Microsoft has kind of sort of already been doing this with Copilot, right? Copilot
yeah.
just shows
oh,
up
yeah.
in Windows
Microsoft
11.
Is definitely first
and,
doing this.
But what's interesting about it is I of course, being, you know, answering a lot of Windows questions, I see a tremendous amount of pushback. People
yep.
want Copilot removed. And which, you know, fine. I used it a little bit. It's not solving any big problems for me, but it's just, and I think your analogy or metaphor is actually quite good. I use cars all the time. You know, sometimes manufacturers release something, put something in their cars that's not quite ready for prime time. And
yep.
people not only don't understand it, they actively don't want it, and maybe they'll go buy a different car because of it.
Yeah.
It's
No,
not
no,
an,
I
it's not until, you know, some other manufacturer gets the details right that it starts to become at least
right.
tolerable, if not desirable.
The Washington Post article had a quote quoted here. It wasn't clear to me, however, why it wouldn't be simpler to just use ChatGPT app or website to generate the bedtime story. So it's talking about like the fact you can ask for a bedtime story from Siri, it showed there. And then you could say, oh, you can ask ChatGPT this, and then ChatGPT just does it. Why can't you just go to chatgpt.com or use an app and do that now? And I think that totally misses the point. It's totally obvious to me why people aren't doing that. People just don't do that. There's a huge number of people that don't have a ChatGPT account, that don't go to it, that don't know how to use it, that haven't touched it, that haven't had the time or the interest to deal with it at all. And those people will use it once it's on their device already. Like once they upgrade, and they're not going to upgrade to iOS 18, for instance, and say, boy, now I've got AI features. They're just going to upgrade because it's an upgrade. Or maybe it comes with their next iPhone. And then they're going to ask Siri something, and then Siri's going to say, oh, you can get a good answer for that with ChatGPT. And they'll say, sure, and press that button. And that'll be the first time they'll ever use ChatGPT. And I'd argue that those people, there are more numerous than the people currently using ChatGPT. Like there's a big group of people out there using AI now. And people like us, also a lot of enthusiasts. I mean, right. You know, like you said, there are a lot of people that are like, I don't want Copilot on my Windows machine. There are also a ton of people on the other side of that, which sure. is one of the things that has made AI, large language model AI, so successful, is that it's attracted a huge hobbyist market.
Yes.
There's a huge number of computer enthusiasts that are not coders. They're not, you know, they like to use their computers for things that really were attracted to ChatGPT when it first came out. And I see those people all the time. They're fascinated with it. They love it. They love playing around with it. And that group of people is big, but it's not a majority, right. Not even close. Maybe it's like 20% of computer users.
I would claim that neither group is a majority, both the enthusiasts or the detractors. The majority right. are ambivalent or completely ignorant of exactly what's going on.
And they will be the first, and they will get their first right. use of right. AI because it's built into Windows and Copilot, or because it's built into one of the Mac, one of the Apple operating systems.
I will say that part of the equation, the difference between having Siri tell you a bedtime story and having ChatGPT do it, is what I would call activation energy. By that I mean to do it with ChatGPT, you have to type it in. If you're using a PC, it's kind of difficult to get it to talk to you the story, to read the story to you. You know, you can select it and have Windows read it for you, but that's not the same. On the mobile version of the mobile app for ChatGPT, yes, you can, you know, get it to read you the story, but it's still a multi-step process that I think is enough of a barrier that, you know, when the kid needs to go to bed, you want it to be easy, right?
Yeah.
You need it to be very, very easy. So the one thing, though, that easy kind of implies, and I'm wondering how this will shake out for Apple, because it's something that has plagued the Amazon devices since they came out, is that how much is it listening? Because that's the ultimate that's the final barrier to activation, right? If I don't have to remember a wake-up word, or even if I do, and I want it to use context from what I was saying before I said the wake-up word, you know, how is that going to work? Is there, and will people be upset by that? You know, they're going to say, oh my gosh, it was listening to me the entire time. Well, yeah, that's kind of how you want the feature to work, if you want it to work the way you want it to work. So, that will be kind of interesting. That sort of leads me into an interesting discussion. Last time we talked a bit about Microsoft's recall that they recently announced with their new Surface Plus or Surface AI Plus or Surface Copilot, whatever. Their recent hardware release where they've also got neural processors on the machine. And it got a lot of flack for essentially privacy issues, what were considered to be privacy issues. So there's an article, again, I've got a link to it. Microsoft addresses Windows recall backlash, promises to fix security issues and make it opt-in. So what it really boiled down to is the feature was opt out, which seems like a bad idea from the start. You know, you turn on your PC and without realizing it, the feature's turned on. It's snapshotting your screen every 5 seconds while you're using it and feeding that to the AI and doing all sorts of stuff. So it's opt-in. Great. You get to choose to use it. The other, though, is that, okay, we'll encrypt the data. Well, apparently they weren't planning on encrypting the data, but now they're going to encrypt the data on your hard drive. And, you know, but it's still a matter of trust us. We're doing the right thing. We're not sending it off to the mothership or any of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I wonder sometimes, Microsoft is getting a lot of flack for that. How is what Apple is doing really that much different? I don't necessarily mean at the technological level. You know, some apps are going to be better. Some technologies are going to be better or worse. That's fine. But ultimately, in a lot of ways, they're doing the same kinds of things. Your Mac is going to be paying attention to what you do so that it can then be more helpful when you ask it questions about, you know, you had a great example a few minutes ago. You know, Siri, open that doc that I had a pie chart in it that I was working on a week ago. That implies Siri has remembered everything you were working on since then, and including that. And that's exactly the kind of thing that Microsoft has been taking flack for with this recall feature. I'm not, absolutely not trying to position Microsoft as a victim. I think it's more a matter of messaging. But ultimately, the same concept in two different platforms is generating two fairly dramatically different results. I was curious what you thought about all that.
Yeah, I don't think Apple's doing the screenshotting kind of thing. I think in trying to figure out the numbers document you were working on last week, I think it's probably just going to look at numbers documents and see last modified dates, that kind of thing. It seems to me it would be useful to have a log, it would be useful to, in addition to created date and modified date and last open date, to maybe actually have a log of when was the file open. It kind of doesn't, if you do a backup, it knows when changes have been made. So it knows something like that.
I forget the file system on the Mac, the default file system. Is that a journal? Is that a journal file system? You know, it is. Yeah. So in theory, it could actually.
So it's got, I don't think Apple's going to do the screenshot kind of thing. It's all what people want to push back at various times. Apple does certainly get a lot of flack. I hear people complaining a lot of times about, the whole how does my iPhone know this stuff? Your iPhone has a database of locations where you've been recently, and it uses that for various different things, but it is your iPhone's database. It's only on device. It's not sent anywhere. So,
but I believe that, but not everybody does, right?
Yeah, exactly. Not everybody does. And then there's the thing, I think we talked about it, was it last week or the week before, where we, mentioned the funny thing where somebody discovered log files and, and was like, you're, computers logging everything you do. It's that's the way computers have been, just log files for 50 years now. It's your computer logging what you do. It's not somebody else, a lot of times these things get blown out of proportion. I think when they're appropriate, Apple or Microsoft or whoever pushes back, and the expert voices then fail to resist. In other words, if the experts are no, that's fine, it's just a bunch of people that don't know what they're talking about pushing back, then the company pushes the other way and nothing comes of it, right? But when the experts come back and disagree, when there's enough experts, Apple had the problem with the CSAM stuff, looking for inappropriate images, right? And people not getting the whole idea of how the hashes work and the on-device checking. When that came up, Apple came up with a system that was far more private than anybody else's system previously, including systems that were in place that were nowhere near as private as this. Like, right. Actually, you know, photo systems, I believe from Google and maybe there's one other one, that were actually just checking your images, right? And Apple wasn't even doing that. Apple actually had a completely private system. The only main complaint was that somebody else could, like another government, like the Chinese government, could come in and say, we want you to check for these hashes, which would be other images that had nothing to do with CSAM, you know, and that was the thing. And Apple finally pushed, there was just enough experts that pushed back that Apple said, all right, we're not going to do it. And the funny thing is this week, there was actually pushback the other way because there were protests at Apple for having the, right. You know, foregoing, providing more protections and things like that. So, you know, Apple's still basically getting it from both sides. They want people to implement this and they want people not, for Apple not to implement it because of privacy. So,
yeah, these are always complicated issues.
Issue.
Specifically with the AI stuff, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out between the two companies. Like I said, I honestly believe that where Apple does a much better job than Microsoft these days is in presentation, positioning, messaging. Microsoft has really stumbled a couple of times hard on some recent feature releases that were unfortunate because the controversy ended up negatively impacting either the adoption of the feature or, as you say, when they have to pull back the feature itself.
Yep.
All righty, onward. Yeah. So,
yes,
I recently finished the Netflix series Sweet Tooth.
Yeah, the new season just came out, right?
Final it came season. Out like a week ago. And
so I have not seen it yet, but I have seen the other seasons.
Okay, good. Yeah. It is a relatively satisfying conclusion to the series. It's you know, like, as you can imagine, it's, you know, the fantasy side of things is there. There's I keep calling her Keiko O'Brien. Because she was that character on Star Trek, but she turns out to be the bad guy this time for this series. It comes to a conclusion, and I think you'll find that it is not necessarily the conclusion you might expect. And I'm still having to think about that a little bit. It's both a good conclusion, but a slightly unsettling one. So I'll leave it at that. I very much enjoyed the entire series, season three as well. And I encourage that, especially for those folks like you that have seen seasons one and two, go for it. Season three is absolutely worth it.
Cool. I saw Furiosa this week. I love Mad Max movies.
Sure.
I should say, like, really George Miller's, you know, series. And you know, I was a fan of them when I was a kid, like even the original one. It just as I just I just think cinematographically, the whole idea of these wide open desert, huge car chases, they're just, you don't see anything else really like them in movies. It's like a genre all to, you know, George Miller's got a genre all to himself. And just doing these things,
right.
And they're really something to behold. I love watching them and seeing them, like, just the scenery and the you know, the characters and what's going on. And it's just, to me, it's just like, it's extremely entertaining. So of course he hit the pinnacle of it with the previous movie, Fury Road. And you know, I guess having figured out that he finally perfected the whole technique, he made another one, a prequel to Fury Road.
I was going to ask, this is a prequel, right?
Yeah, prequel. So Anya Taylor-Joy plays the younger version of Charlize Theron's character, and it takes you right up to the beginning of the previous movie.
Oh, good. Okay.
So yeah, so it's a direct, I mean, it even shows, you see scenes from Fury Road during the credits of Furiosa to give you that continuation of, like, it's gone right up to that point And now here is why you watch the credits. You can just be reminded. So it's funny because if you see a sequel, sometimes you see little bits at the beginning to remind you what the previous movie was.
Right.
And in this one, he actually shows you things at the end to remind you that, oh yeah, there was this other movie that continues the story. But I thought it was excellent. And of course, it's just an amazing thing to see these.
Right.
I saw it in IMAX.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. That does seem like one that's worthy of a bigger screen.
I mean, yeah, you're out there in the outback and just seeing all this stuff. Anyway, if you like that kind of thing, it is a lot of fun. And Anya Taylor-Joy does a fantastic job as do some of the other actors in it.
I have a hard time still looking at Thor and seeing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did interesting role in this movie. He gets to use his acting skills. That's no doubt about it. It's uh-huh. He's not just thrown in there as like, well, let's put a big name in this role. He is in it a lot, and he plays quite a character.
The bad guys in the Mad Max series are always kind of, I don't want to say cartoonish, but in a way they kind of are. They're like, you know, very much larger than life.
Yes,
in many different ways. So. Cool.
And he brings a little depth to it too,
nice.
As does Anya Taylor-Joy, I think, in her role, a little depth to what's going on. Anyway, fun stuff.
Yeah, cool. In self-promotion this week, I'm going to point folks at an article. Actually, I just revised it. It's called Free is Not Free. It's number 18819. And it's basically just a reminder of exactly what it says. If you're getting something for free, you're not getting it for free. There's a cost somewhere along the line. And it is something, there are definitely some misleading things on the internet that you need to pay particularly careful attention to. And the different ways that some advertisers try to mislead you. It's a good reminder of all those things and something that I wish more people paid attention to.
Mm. I'll link to something that should come out, well, tomorrow when we're recording this, but today for when this episode is probably posted, just my summary of some of the new non-AI features in the next version of macOS, which, by the way, is Sequoia.
Yeah.
Sequoia is the name, which most people kind of predicted.
It's also my SUV. All righty then. On that note, I think that pretty much wraps us up again for another week.
Yep.
Thanks as always for being here, and we will see you all again real soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The show notes for this week are at tehpodcast.com/TEH223. If you have a comment or question for us, be sure to leave it on the show notes page. The TEH podcast is hosted by Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com and edited by Connie Delaney. I'm your synthetic announcer, Adam, from 11labs.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you here real soon.